Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
A quick note from me, producer Reese, before this episode starts. As you probably already know, Joe and James are putting out a new weekly bonus episode of the show to those backing the $3 tier on Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/cinematicuniverse. They were doing weekly recaps of WandaVision before on that feed, and now they've moved on to The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. We've decided to let the first episode of that onto the main feed here, so non-subscribers can get a little taste. The plan is to recap all the upcoming Disney Plus MCU shows, and there's got lots of other fun plans to fill some of the gaps over the next year. So if you enjoy this episode and want more, or you just want to support the show in general, again, head over to patreon.com/cinematicuniverse. But for now, let's go over to Joe and James.
Hello and welcome to a bonus Patreon episode of Cinematic Universe. I'm your host, Joe Cunningham, and joining me to discuss The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is...
James Hunt.
James, episode one of a brand new Disney Plus TV series, Falcon and the Winter Soldier. This one is called New World Order. Directed by Carrie Skoglund, who is a Canadian director who... Looking at her filmography, she's done a lot of TV over the last couple of decades. Directed an episode of The Punisher, so she's got a bit of experience in what potentially is still canon in the MCU. I don't know.
Who can say?
And yeah, and so we are picking up at least 6 months after... the end of Endgame, so also that suggests very post WandaVision, which is interesting given that this was originally going to drop before WandaVision, but hey, Marvel's timeline is a mess at the best of times. And yeah, we've got
all your faves.
Well, all your faves.
Yeah, my fave.
we've got the Winter Soldier, who is trying to adjust to life now that he has a pardon and he has his freedom and can basically attempt to go back to a normal life after, 70 years of being on ice and then and then just waking up to kill someone every 5 minutes and then heading back. And we have...
It's not a surprise that he's in therapy, let's put it that way.
We have Sam, who is kind of struggling with the... We've been given the opportunity to, you know, take up the Captain America mantle after Steve gave him the shield at the end of Avengers Endgame. And you know, actively, when we meet him at the start of this series... kind of rejecting that and continuing on as Falcon, still doing his superheroing, but doing it, in his old Falcon guise.
I mean, I've got to say, it's more or less the setup I was expecting, with the sole difference being that they're not already a duo.
Yes.
I sort of assumed they would have immediately slipped into that, like, you know, Captain America's not around, so we're the closest we've got to friends now.
Yeah, and it seems like there's a mention in this episode that Sam has been texting Bucky, but Bucky hasn't been responding. So maybe, mm-hmm. you know, Sam is kind of feeling like, maybe I should do something with this guy. Because they're not friends, right? They actively kind of don't like each other, irritate each other, and have been like, you know, yeah. together by convenience of having the same friend. so... Yeah, I was surprised. And actually, I think we can probably give our overall impressions of the episode before we get into the weeds of the kind of the step-by-step plot. But I kind of felt like I couldn't land on whether this was a good, bad episode of television. I kind of felt like I had to give it an incomplete grade, because come the end of the episode, the fact that we still hadn't seen the Falcon and the Winter Soldier together, I was like, oh, so what is this series then? Because I don't feel like I can really, you know, comment on how successful it is until I said this on our chat thread, but whenever I listen to House to Astonish and Al is talking about a comic and getting to the end of the first issue and not having the whole thing set up, that's what I kind of felt like here, because this isn't a 9-episode series like WandaVision. It's 6 episodes, and we've got 1/6 of the way through this series, and it feels like the, you know, not all the pieces have been laid out for us.
Yeah, it feels like they haven't arrived at the premise yet. Like, yeah. I feel like they're going to very quickly meet up given the events of the final scene, but also... like, show us those two together, because that's what's going to keep us engaged in the show, right?
Mm.
It's in the title. We were sold a buddy movie, but so far there are no buddies.
Yeah. Which also leads me to think that this is being approached, and you know, I hate it when people say this, but it leads me to believe this is being approached as a 6-part movie rather than a episodic TV series, because... you know, if you're pacing it like one overall story, then yeah, maybe you don't feel the need to have them together in that first 15% of your story, and maybe you don't feel the need to introduce or at least, you know, give us a glimpse of all of the supporting players, because, you know, we know from the trailers and promotional material for this that Sharon Carter is going to play a significant part in the series. Now, maybe that's only a couple of episodes, but still, you know, someone who was big enough to be played up in the advertising. We know that Baron Zemo is going to be one of the big, I mean, we assume, antagonists of this series. he's nowhere to be seen in this first episode.
I think, yeah, it's fair. If this is the first half of Act 1, then fair enough. I would hope they're together pretty quickly in Episode 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, should we get into the events of the episode? I think, as well, I had a lot more fun in the front half of this episode than I did in the back half. I think it starts off really strong.
I think everyone did.
Yeah, but not even
the characters
just with,
most of all.
Not even just with the action scene, right? The which we open on. Like, the action scene is fun, but.
Mm-hmm.
I think like it was checking in on those characters. It was getting their vibe again that I thought was interesting, and then, kind of treading water through their story until we waited for that inciting incident at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
So, we kick off, James, with some ironing.
Iron Man, it's what you want, right?
Yeah, there we go. Hey, I thought this was supposed to be making allusions to Captain America, not Iron Man. But so Sam is ironing his suit. There's the shield next to him, and we hear the voiceover of Captain America, you know, bequeathing the shield to Sam at the end of Endgame. That line is then repeated again by Sam later in the episode, so it's obviously a moment that they want you to remember. They really want to hammer home why Steve gave the shield to Sam, and why Sam is reluctant. That he was reluctant from the very first moment. Something about it didn't feel right, or didn't feel natural to him. But then we cut to big old action sequence. So there is a group called LAF. I'm assuming that's not a comics thing. Is that just, or is it?
It's not a comics thing. Nope. If it was a comics thing, it would have a cool acronym.
But they're just, hey, we're having a laugh up in Tunisian airspace. And Sam jumps out of a plane as, you know, as a Captain America is wont to do. And I thought they did a really good job in this sequence, right? But with, although it's Sam wearing the Falcon costume and using the wings and doing Falcony things, I actually, first of all, I don't think we've really seen much of that, because anytime Falcon has been Falcon in the MCU, it's been a cutaway to him flying while someone else is doing more interesting stuff, or is doing
the
driving force of the action scene, and he's just somewhere in the background. And I think, you know, one of the only featured action sequences for him is him getting humiliated by Ant-Man in the first Ant-Man movie.
Yeah, on the ground, which is a tough gig for him.
Yeah. it's like that, you know, do you think you'd win in a fight with a shark? And it's like, well, it depends on whether I'm on home turf or not. But yeah, I think they do a good job in this sequence of it feeling like a Captain America action sequence. Like, you know, because Cap was always jumping out of planes. He would use his shield to kind of, you know, glide down and do the kind of, you know, like the absurd sweeping into the hatch of planes and getting straight into fight mode. And then the smart move I thought of, bringing us back a very minor Captain America villain in Batroc, who we last saw in it. That's it, at the start of Winter Soldier, right?
Yep, on the Lemurian Star.
And, you know, a character that everyone liked. Or, well, I don't know if it was the character we liked. I think it was one that comics fans, I remember you and Seb being like, I can't believe they put Batroc in this movie.
Yeah, Batroc in the comics is kind of a joke, and they turned him into someone cool for the movie. So, yeah, I was glad to see him back in this.
And they had one of those great, like, it's when I think of the Russos and their 2D action sequences, I think of that fight with Batroc that, like, literally plays out like it's, you know...
Yeah, like Street Fighter 2.
Yeah, like it's Street Fighter, yeah. Where they're just kind of going in a straight line at one another, flipping over each other and just throwing kicks and punches. So I thought that was a smart idea to bring him back. It's someone recognisable. I don't think there's anyone else that I can actually think... It, you know, it would be Crossbones otherwise, right? You'd have I wouldn't rule out, despite what we thought we saw happen to that character, that character coming back at some point. But there didn't really feel like anyone else. And actually, as soon as I saw it, I was like, ah, great, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then some kind of fun aerial action that's perfect for Sam. But also, I quite liked the idea of those, like, glider suits that the baddies were wearing, and that it wasn't a case of just, well, because we're in the air, obviously Falcon is gonna mess these guys up because there's so many of them and they have insane missiles.
Mm-hmm.
There's fun stuff with Red Wing. It felt like, you know, after saying the action in WandaVision felt, you know, kind of crap, I thought... I thought this was good. I thought this, like, this felt like movie level action.
Yeah, it was very cinematic. Yeah. Yeah. My problem with this scene, one of the things I was a bit concerned about is how readily Falcon was just out there, like, straight up murdering people. Like, he did not give a fuck. He was like, okay, well, these guys pulled their guns, so that's it.
That's always been the case in this corner of the MCU, though. Like,
oh, sure, yeah. You know,
when thinking back to that
Lemurian Star sequence.
Yeah, in Winter Soldier. That starts with Captain America just kind of going onto the ship and just bashing people off at the side of it into the water. And you're like, oh, yeah, they're dead. And I'm pretty sure the sequence at the start of Civil War, before the civilians die, I'm pretty sure they're just, you know, not taking any prisoners in terms of just killing all of Crossbones' guys.
Yeah. Just part of what's going to intrigue me about this show is whether they interrogate the sort of idea of superheroes working for the government and military.
Yeah. Or as
so that's something I'm going to gonna have an eye on it.
Military industrial complex.
Indeed, the military industrial complex, yep.
I think that's really interesting. I've kind of always had a bit of a problem with Captain America killing, and I get the logic right, and I get why people say that that's different from Superman or Batman, or I don't know, you know, very, you know, it tends to be the DC characters anyway that people have the biggest thing about not killing, and I get that, you know, Captain America's a soldier, Falcon is a soldier, they go to war, they kill people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then this episode, I think it frames it in a slightly different light when they're talking about the fact of, well, actually, Sam might be working with the Air Force, but he's not getting paid. He's not an active member of the military. He's just someone now who's working with the military.
Yeah, he's a freelance murderer.
And it kind of draws attention to how uncomfortable that is.
Yeah, I mean, part of me suspects that they will be talking about those issues a little. I don't know, that scene where they're sitting in Tunisia after the fight's happened.
The next scene, the guy, perfect, James, keep us moving forward.
Yeah, correct. The guy comes up and he's like, thanks for saving my wife. And you're like, yeah, he just killed like 14 people. they all have families too.
Yeah, but they were very bad people, James. Oh, sure. Don't know. I don't know whether that is something. I think we're definitely going to get into the idea of the heroes as tools of the military and of the American military in particular, I think. But yeah, I will be interested if they do interrogate that, because I think if they do, it casts a bit of a shade over some of the stuff that they've done with impunity in the past movies.
Sure.
And, you know, where do you draw the line? Is it cool to kill one of Batroc's guys? Is it cool to kill someone in Hydra? Is it cool to genocide Thanos' entire race? You know?
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So
gonna have to pull down some statues.
Hey, it is a politically relevant show. It's 2021. So yeah, in that scene in Tunisia afterwards, we are properly introduced to Torres. I think it's Joaquin Torres, is that right?
Joaquin Torres, yeah, that was a surprise to me.
Who is a comics character who's fairly recent. So he was in the Nick Spencer, Sam Wilson comic from 2015.
Yeah, the Falcon, when Falcon was Captain America in 2015.
I think it's literally called Sam Wilson Captain America, and there was a Steve Rogers Captain America series as well a little bit later.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah. It was after Steve came back to life, yeah. He was the new Falcon.
Which makes sense, right? Because if you've got a new Captain America, he needs a new Falcon. And I read that series, which might not be a surprise to listeners, because it's a 2015 comic, which is when I was just hoovering them all up. And I've got to be honest, he was the part of the comic that I don't really remember. But he, you know, here, I think it makes sense for there to be a potential new sidekick in waiting for Sam. I thought they had really nice chemistry in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the performance. I should. It's Danny Ramirez is the actor playing Torres. I thought they were good together, and I'd quite like to see, you know, I'd quite like to see that. I guess it didn't occur to me that if he was going to be Captain America at some point, that he would need a sidekick as well. But I guess that's something pretty intrinsic to the idea of Captain America, that he has a sidekick.
Yeah, for various points. I mean, both of the characters who are the leads in this series are former Captain America sidekicks. So in that sense, yeah, like most Marvel characters don't have sidekicks, but Captain America being a sort of 1940s throwback did and does.
So Torres gets to deliver a bunch of exposition in this scene, which is basically to say that, you know, he's working down here on the ground and that he'll keep Sam informed, but that there's this group called the Flag Smashers who believe that the world was better during the blip and they want a world that is unified without borders. And, it was one of those, when I was listening to that, I was thinking, that's interesting that in a series that is dealing with the idea of do we still need a Captain America in this world? What does this symbol of America mean? What should it mean? What can it mean?
Mm-hmm.
That you have an antagonist saying, wouldn't it be better if we just didn't have nations? And you know, in a way, you go, yeah, like in a like Star Trek idealistic future, just having everyone united under one flag would be great. It would be the dream. But you get the sense that the Flag Smashers aren't really that kind of that maybe they have the same kind of selfishness that nations have, that they might want a world without borders, but you know, if they're saying the world was better during the blip, Sam says, well, yeah, every time the world gets better for one group, it gets worse for another. So I'm gonna throw this out there. I think the Flag Smashers are gonna be bad. I don't think we should like
them. Yeah, I think it's fair to say that their goals, while they might sound lofty, and you know, even though they were robbing Swiss banks, are probably going to turn out to have some less than laudable methods.
There was just that hot second though where I went, they might be onto something, you know.
Yeah,
bit of a which you know, hopefully there is a bit of nuance to them, because you know, it put me in mind of, you know, I think we've just watched a series in WandaVision where, you know, you can make a case that we had kind of a main antagonist in Agnes, but also, you know, we had a lead character in the Scarlet Witch, and certainly where we leave her, that, you know, there are shades of heroism and villainy there.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea of moving towards these shades of grey villains that, you know, take the lead from what Black Panther did, which was to go, this guy is, like, there's no denying he is the villain, but also you kind of get it, right?
Yeah, he has a point.
Yeah, he has
a... And, you know, I think, especially if you're going to interrogate the idea of who is America's national symbol and superhero, which is something they're clearly going to do.
Yeah.
It makes sense to say, well, this is the alternative. Like, people who don't believe in nations, like, what do they look like?
And are the Flag Smashers a comics thing, James?
So there's a villain called the Flag Smasher.
Okay.
He works for an organization called Ultimatum, which is the underground, liberated, totally integrated mobile army to unite mankind.
Wow. When did they debut?
1985. Surprising. Oh, wow.
I wonder how long it took the writer to sit down and come up with that acronym.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So, I don't know what direction we're going in with the Flag Smashers, whether that they are going to have anything to do with the new Captain America, who is shown at the end of the episode, whether they're going to have anything to do with Baron Zemo, or whether they're going to be their own kind of separate force outside of those two. There is a character called Dovich, who is mentioned. Well, I think he's the guy that's super strong at the end of the episode, who is one of the Flag Smashers.
Yes.
Looks like from the IMDb picture that's him. So, you know, I think it probably remains to be seen whether he is the face of the Flag Smashers, this kind of superhero that they have within their own midst, or again, yeah, whether there's more to them.
Yeah. Is he the Flag Smasher?
Yes, is he the Flag Smasher?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So we cut back to Washington, where Sam is... It's the Smithsonian, isn't it, right? It's the Smithsonian where all of this is...
It is indeed, yeah.
Yeah. Where we've been back to a few times in the MCU since the Winter Soldier, where there's this big Captain America exhibit, and Sam has decided that he is going to donate the shield to the exhibit. He says...
And as we know from WandaVision, having a bunch of vibranium just lying around...
Yes, is not a great idea, is it? Someone's probably going to try and take it.
Yeah.
So he says, we need heroes, we need ones suited for the times we're in, and we need symbols that are given meaning. And but then says, thank you, Captain America, but this belongs to you. And and donates the flag back. And you see in the audience, James's best friend, who did you pay to get Darcy and Rhodey in the first two MCU Disney Plus
series? They're giving the people what they want, Joe. I don't know what to tell you.
Did you know that Rhodey was going to be in this? Because if I did, I'd forgotten.
I can't remember if I knew. I certainly expected it. And when he turned up, I was more like, yeah, of course, rather than, oh, that's a surprise.
I love the idea of giving Sam another black character to bounce off here, and I loved the way that Don Cheadle played this. I think I've been kind of on record of saying I love Cheadle, but I think Rhodey is kind of boring in the MCU. I don't think we've had many great Rhodey moments over the years, and your love for him kind of baffles me. And I think his suit with all of the guns is so dumb. Put your guns away, Rhodey.
No, don't put the guns away. Have more guns. Have so many guns you can't properly move.
I mean, talking about characters who can literally only kill people when they engage in combat. But yeah, I love Don Cheadle in this scene. I loved the way he was written as well, where he didn't tell Sam that what he was doing was wrong. He didn't tell Sam that he had, you know, it wasn't this chastisement of, Steve picked you. You should be Captain America now. You need to take that shield back and man up and fucking do this. It was it was this very kind of compassionate, like, I'm going to listen to what you've got to say. My face is going to tell you that I don't think you've really understood the importance of you holding that shield yet, why I'm desperate for you to do it. And basically, like, look, I'm here for you. This isn't the end of your journey with that shield. Keep in touch. He literally says, doesn't he, at the end of the scene, I'll be in touch.
Yeah.
And I thought it was such a lovely scene with Cheadle. I thought he absolutely smashed it.
I think it's good coming from him as well, because, like, you think back to the fact that he was at one point Iron Patriot.
Oh yeah, I didn't.
And
even
like
think
it,
about
it
that.
Gives it extra weight. It's a good example of using like the inbuilt history of the characters to subtle effect.
It's only at this point that we get to meet the Winter Soldier, which does make me think, James, that in the hierarchy of this show, it's Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Is that fair?
Yeah, they took their time. They took their time.
But do you get the impression that that's probably the weighting that we're going to get throughout the series? That it is, it's Sam's story, but we're going to spend, you know, kind of the way that WandaVision was Wanda and Vision.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it feels like the natural endpoint of this show is Falcon becoming Captain America. And in that context, you know, Captain America has to be the most important character. So fair enough.
Mm.
And but I'm sure Bucky will get plenty of material too.
I'm sure he will. But it was something that kind of made me go, okay, I'm a little bit more relaxed. Just because I think it's, you know, there's more fertile, interesting storytelling ground to tell there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to explore there, you know, the idea of a Black Captain America, the what he has to grapple with, and it feels like there is a wider, you know, there's a lot of outside of the MCU stuff that you can that you can explore through Sam. You can explore mm-hmm. real political, you know, the landscape of 21st century America in the real world through Sam in this series. With Bucky, kind of feel like he's just a product of the MCU at this point. Like, he is now, he's the remaining man out of time. And he's this guy who did these horrific things in his past. But yes, he's carrying guilt for them, but also he didn't do them. And we've explored that in the previous movies. We did that in Civil War. And even, you know, like the main thrust of his plot in this episode is, well, I killed a guy and I really regret doing that because I never wanted to kill innocent people. And I'm now hanging out with someone who doesn't know that I killed the person that was really important to them. And I was like, yeah, we did this with Captain America, with Iron Man and his parents,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Didn't we do this? That's it. That was exactly the same, like, dilemma that he was grappling with in that movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that's where Zemo turns up again. Who knows? He's like, hey, guys, I thought we already sorted this out.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does...
Haven't you dealt with this already?
It does feel like there's not as obvious a wider point to make with Bucky as you say. Like, it's a bit, I don't know, maybe it's adding in some MCU flavor for people who want that character, but yeah.
I'm trying to, you know, when I think about his emotional journey in this series, there's no real world parallel that I can put on it. You know, the grief stuff in WandaVision is so easy to transpose, and the weight of that responsibility of that decision of, like, heavy hangs the shield, I guess, is the dilemma facing Sam.
Yeah,
and I get it, and you know, you can paint that in the real world in so many in any kind of situations where someone has had to succeed. Someone who's been fantastic at what they did, and then certainly, you know, kind of like Black people taking up role model leadership positions in modern America and the way that the country reacts to those people. You know, you can literally look at, I don't know, like someone like LeBron James and go, yeah, I can see the modern day parallels with that. I just can't see it yet for Bucky. And I'm not sure we're going to get it. Which is why, you know, I think it's fine if he's the buddy and we have some fun with him and Sam. And it's the kind of the supplementary stuff of, hey, this is this other character that most of you like. We're going to get to hang around with him for 6 episodes, but the weighty stuff isn't going to be handled by him.
Yeah, well, you know, Bucky can be there to bounce ideas off. He can be Steve's voice in it, if you like. Like, that's the natural role for him, I think, is to be the guy who was like, well, you know, I was Captain America's best friend, and I think he would want X, Y, Z.
Yeah, I did think when we were hearing Steve's voice over in this, I was like, there is that thing in the back of my mind going, well, where is he?
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Because, like,
But at the same time, you don't want him to show up in this series, right?
Yeah, you absolutely don't want to see him. But also, I want to know where he is. Like, it's just, it's a tough thing to steer around because Chris Evans got his ending. He got the perfect ending. I never want to see him again. Well, but also, they left old Captain America alive.
You kind of don't want the new black Captain America to have to be going, oh, Steve, what would you have done here?
Yeah, exactly. I sort of think they should have killed him off screen. They should have just been like, you know, we saw what happened to him. He had a peaceful death in his sleep 6 months ago. Because you just like, why isn't Bucky talking to him? Like, where's he gone?
Or just one line of dialogue to kind of stop us from asking these questions. But I don't know. Maybe most people aren't. Maybe it's just us.
Maybe.
We're going too deep again, James. Pull back. So Bucky has been having nightmares, which are actually flashbacks. And we see the first one play out where he's on a Winter Soldier mission. And at the end of the mission, there's a guy who has witnessed the hit. And Bucky just kills him.
Mm-hmm.
Point blank shoots him. Or at least we think he does, I guess. We're pretty sure that he does. I guess we don't actually see him shot on screen, but I'm assuming so.
Yeah.
So Bucky's having nightmares and he's in therapy. And what we see through the course of this scene is that Bucky's not being honest in his therapy, but he is kind of committing to some of it. So he's been given three rules that he needs to adhere to, that he can't break the law, no one gets hurt, and then he has to make amends. So he's got this list of people in a little notebook, like Steve had his little notebook. And in it, he has this list of names of people that he needs to make amends with, or make amends to, I guess, in the case of the scene that he's remembering in this, where there is a... I think it's a senator who he helped get elected when he was the Winter Soldier. And this person, this Hydra agent, has remained in power since then and has continued to abuse her power. I don't know whether we should read any more significance into that, James, that there are still, like, active Hydra. Hydra agents and, you know, bad actors within the US political system.
Yeah.
Even if Hydra has long ceased to be a thing, it could just be shorthand for "Hey, don't trust the government." Certainly in this series,
yeah.
Right?
I sort of wonder if they're even going that far with it. I think, you know, not everyone is a good guy is probably the point they're making here.
I just, you know, at the end of the episode, the US government makes a particular decision. And the MC, you know, this series has two ways to go with that. It can just be, that is what an American government, that's the kind of thing that an American government would do, or there are reasons why, and there are still, you know, people that you need to worry about in political office in the MCU.
Yeah.
I hope it's the former, but it did make me wonder when they kind of made a point of saying this was an ex-Hydra agent.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually thought Sebastian Stan was quite good in the flashback scene where he smiled at them and read the "I'm making amends" line through the car window. I think Stan has a couple of moments in this episode. It's just, I get the sense that maybe we might be watching a series that attempts to give him a personality by the end of it. Because in this one, he just kind of has to be mopey still.
Yeah, well, that's the problem for me, is that I, like, for a start, when he has that therapy scene and he has, like, 9 or 10 lines in a row, I was going like, wow, when's he ever spoken this much? But at the same time, I don't feel like I know what his personality is. Like, even in Captain America, his thing was like, he's a fairly good guy, he's Captain America's best mate, and, you know, he just wants to join the war and hang out with women, and you're like, that's all I've got to go on.
I think the thing that I struggle with him, and I'm going to have to go beyond my generic bit of just that Bucky's the worst that I do on the I do on the main podcast all the time. But I do genuinely believe that through the MCU, of all of the major heroes, Bucky is the worst. but in, I guess what I struggled with in this episode was they kept hitting on, this is a man out of time, right? In the same way that Steve Rogers was.
Yeah, he's got no friends, he's got no life outside of being a superhero, and he's not even allowed to do that anymore.
I just don't necessarily buy Bucky as a man out of the time in the same way that I did Steve. And that's more, I don't necessarily buy Sebastian Stan. Because he doesn't have that same Boy Scout energy, and mm-hmm. because he doesn't have that, you know, there's the joke about how stoic Chris Evans looks in this episode even. Like, he just doesn't, I don't innately look at him and go, yeah, that's a guy from the 1940s. I go, yeah, no, yeah. that's a guy who would fit in modern day Brooklyn with his with his stubble and his admittedly very handsome face. So, this is going to be an ongoing battle for me throughout the series, I think. But, you know, if they can use this series to rehabilitate him and give him an interesting platform to move forward in the MCU with beyond this, then great. But I still don't think, even though that this, you know, this felt like a shift for Bucky, that he was, as you say, that he was able to deliver dialogue and did actually smile a couple of times, even if it was sarcastic. we're not there yet. There's a lot of work still to be done.
I think the general tone of the episode was a bit more downbeat than I was expecting. Because, like, again, I was geared up for a Falcon and Winter Soldier sort of buddy piece.
Yeah.
And in this, like, no quips, no jokes, just a lot of people in tough situations.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I do like, James, that Bucky is back in Brooklyn. So he's gone back to his hometown. That's nice. Mm-hmm. And he's hanging out with this older Asian gentleman, and they go and eat at a restaurant, and they're kind of having a fun little chat, and Bucky, we find out, he's been unsuccessful on Tinder. and he's got his eye on the waitress in the restaurant.
Yeah, because he's probably got it set to women. That's the problem there.
And he takes a liking to the waitress, and his friend kind of says, oh, you need to go on a date with him. And I'll be honest, James, from the moment that that character was introduced, I didn't have much faith that the Asian man that was killed by the Winter Soldier in the flashback scene would be unconnected from the Asian man that we met a couple of scenes later. It just felt like, are we going to have this really diverse cast, or is it actually the Asian people are connected? And so it proved. This guy is the father of the guy that he murdered in the flashback, and the reason they're hanging out is because he's on his list of people that he needs to make amends with, and he hasn't done it yet because he doesn't want to admit to this guy that he killed his son.
Did you feel that was obvious from the moment the guy started crying about his son? Because I did, but I also saw people saying, like, oh, it was a good reveal at the end of the episode, and I was like, yeah, it was clear to me pretty early on.
I was clear on it from the moment he started crying, but I suspected it from the moment he walked on screen.
Yeah, quite. So part of me wonders, were we just ahead of the curve, or, you know, was that a storytelling failure?
Yeah, because when he does get to that guy's apartment and you see, like, the little shrine in the background with his picture, I was like, yeah, I know.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. So, Bucky killed this guy's son, and we've already litigated that, but it does feel like a bit of a retread. Sam goes to visit his sister, who I don't know if it has been mentioned before in the MCU. But he's got a sister.
Yeah, I don't think so.
He's got niece and nephews.
Nephews.
Or is it just nephews? Got nephews.
He is Uncle Sam. Niece and nephew, yeah.
Yes, he is literally Uncle Sam. That's nice. see what they did there. And they've got a bow, and it's like a family, like their family's old fishing business, and the sister is saying, like,
I want to know, is this the ship of Theseus that they seeded in WandaVision? Right? Yeah, it's all connected.
Yeah, I mean, some of those articles, what does the ship of Theseus mean for the MCU moving forwards? And, hey, maybe we're about to find out. That was very good, James. I enjoyed it. So this this boat needs to... I don't know. I got what they were going for here. It gave them an opportunity to talk about the facts that the Avengers don't actually, or that like the heroes don't get paid, and that and how that might be vastly different in the way that affects certain people more than others, and how that might affect, you know, the black working class guy from Louisiana who in the way that it might not affect Steve or Tony or Doctor Strange, and has an impact on his family. I got what they were going for, and the bank loan scene that we have later in the episode where they go to, where, you know, they literally go to the bank and ask for a loan and get rejected. There's some kind of hand waving about, well, you were gone for 5 years, so we don't have any proof of income. And I know you're saying you've got government contracts, but it doesn't seem like you are, you know, that you are safe to give a loan to. Mm-hmm. And I very much got the sense there that what the show was implying was this is the kind of structural racism that black people face in America, and the kind of the economic aspect of that that is used to keep people from certain communities down, and, you know, and in the economic situation that they're in, you know, the kind of the American dream only exists for some people.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I remember having a conversation with people who were saying, like, oh, you know, it does feel a bit like they've made the only black character poor. Part of the point is that he isn't poor. He's just, you know, the black experience in America is people assuming you are poor because you are black.
And that there's certainly some element of pride there, I get the impression, with the sister. And that, you know, she's not the superhero. She's just the person who's trying to live her life, and she wants to live it, you know, in a fair society. She would be able to, you know, to be able to go about and fix it the way that she needs to. But all of these impediments being put in her place.
Even there's that aspect of like Falcon being like, well, you know, I'm the Falcon and they're not going to say no to me. And then of course they say no to him because, you know, he's not wearing his Falcon outfit now.
Yeah, and would they have said no to Steve Rogers, I guess, is the implicit thing in that scene. And you get the impression, no, they would not.
No, they would not. Yeah, exactly.
So, completely understand what they are going for in this subplot and why it's there. I've got to say, though, like, I really struggled with the scenes themselves. spending, you know, for an episode that begins with a 10-minute action sequence, spending the kind of last 15, 20 minutes of the episode with Sam talking about, can I get a small business loan, it's not the most exhilarating stuff, is it?
Who was it who said in our group chat, like, this feels like a good episode of a TV show I wouldn't watch?
Yeah.
I felt that way about The Punisher, and I feel that way about this show to some extent, is that...
And do you mean
it's
the
tackling
kind of
some interesting stuff?
The genre elements of it, that, you know, if this wasn't an MCU show,
if it was a show about two cops who grew up together and then live divergent lives and how they come back together, I'd be like, seems great, not my kind of thing.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, that was one of the reasons why I thought that this was the least interesting show on paper to me of the...
Mm-hmm.
Until I kind of went, oh, actually, are they going to do something really interesting at the centre of it? and that's what I'm clinging on to.
Yeah, if they get more towards the superhero stuff, I'll be happier. Like, I like that these kind of issues are being tackled. I prefer them to be a bit broader.
I think,
you know, in terms of the genre, like,
I think this is. Yeah. I think the stuff with the sister and the boat, it's not what they're tackling there, it's how they're tackling it. And it was the you know, it was the first time in this episode, and, you know, on Disney Plus as a whole, that I kind of felt like this is a scene I could have seen on the Netflix Marvel shows.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, this whole episode had the feel of one of those Netflix shows. Like, slow and deliberate and, you know, well put together, but also it's not got the zing that you expect of Marvel Studios.
It still felt a lot, you know, still for me anyway, felt a cut above. And like I say, you know, it just doesn't feel like that the entire deck has been dealt yet. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I'm not going to fully come down on it. We see Bucky having his date with the waitress in the restaurant. They play Battleship and he brings flowers, and because of his metal arm, he's wearing creepy leather gloves the whole way through. And if I was her, the moment he kept those gloves on, I would have been ringing my friend saying,
"Yeah, right.
Can you arrange something? This dude won't take his leather gloves off."
Yeah, won't take off his strangling gloves.
Yeah.
Has got some weird thing about his fingerprints.
Yeah. And just generally has a really weird vibe. He can't answer any question straight. Tommy was 106. What's wrong with this guy? So they're having the date, and then he kind of, like, she mentions the guy's son again, and that triggers him, and he runs out and goes to visit the guy, and you think, oh, is he going to handle this? And we go, no, actually, that's probably something that's going to have to be paid off in episode 6.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then I guess the big thing that is left to discuss, James, is the reveal at the end of the episode. So Bucky's had his date, Sam has had his bank meeting, and then the TV turns on, and someone's like, Sam, you've got to see this. There is, you know, generic government official who was in the opening sequence at the museum, who is giving this spiel about how, you know, it's all well and good having all of these heroes, but we need to, you know, he kind of explicitly says we need someone to defend this country. You know, we've got all these other heroes that defend Earth, but we need someone who defends this country. And so I think the line that he then reads is, we need a real person who embodies America's greatest values. And, you know, again, America and great next to each other are a certain trigger. We need someone to inspire us again, someone who can be a symbol for all of us. And then we see new Captain America, who, you know, we know from the promotional stuff of this series is John Walker, played by Wyatt Russell, and he runs out in a new Captain America uniform, but with Steve's shield.
Yeah.
And you just see Falcon watching, kind of head in his hands, going, ah, shit. I've let this happen. James, talk to us about John Walker in the comics.
So John Walker was a replacement Captain America whose deal is that he is a little bit fash. He later became US agent. Like, he's generally a good guy, but also not in... He does, you know, he is... I guess more of an anti-hero. Like, he is doing good stuff, but you don't like it. You don't like the way he's doing it.
And I guess that as a Captain America, then, is he more a reflection of a modern America than of the, you know, the Boy Scout America that, you know,
I mean,
the Captain America that's going off to fight Nazis rather than the Captain America who would be, you know, pursuing modern day American foreign policy.
It's hard to say, because he's like a authoritarian version of Captain America. Whereas, like, 1940s Captain America was, you know, his watchword was freedom and patriotism. And, you know, in a much more simplified era. Whereas the John Walker Captain America is there to be, like, you know, a figurehead and tool of the state. You know,
I mean, tool of the state very much seems like the direction we're moving in here.
Yeah, quite.
So it sounds like in the comics he is... Well, the way you're describing him makes him sound a bit Punisher-y, Judge Dreddy, that he's, you know, on the surface maybe doing the stuff that you would want him to do, but not going about it in a great way, and you kind of struggle to root for him.
Yeah. He's got the patriotic aspect, but like I say, in a more authoritarian way.
Yeah.
Like he's brutal. He's a bit more like Homelander from The Boys, but, you know, not full Nazi, but certainly someone who you wouldn't say represents the best of your patriotism.
So he could be like a modern day Republican.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to watch this series and he's going to compare to both Steve Rogers and to Sam. And yeah. It'll be interesting, I think, how quickly Sam regrets not lifting the shield. Is it that he regrets it because this guy is there instead, or does he regret it because he realizes that he made the wrong decision, and now because there's another guy doing it, it's not as simple as just, you know, the agency's been taken away from him.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the actual physical introduction of him in the show?
I mean, it seems very clear to me that he's wearing a costume that's not designed to look good on him.
I'm going to give the show the benefit of the doubt and say that. Because, like, Wyatt Russell is a handsome guy. You know, he's Kurt Russell's son. Yeah. He's, you know, from the stuff that I've seen him in over the years, he has, you know, a decent slice of his dad's charisma. I think he's going to be good in this show. Yeah, and like I say, he's a handsome dude as well. And you see him in the costume here, and you're like, I wouldn't have recognized that was Wyatt Russell.
No.
Behind the helmet. And, like, he looks like he's got this weird kind of, like, shrunken head. Like, his chin looks really odd underneath the strap, and he just does this little wink to the camera. And, yeah, I'm gonna give the show the benefit of the doubt and just say, yeah, they want him to look like a kind of shitty action figure version of a Captain America rather than the real deal.
Yeah, I think that's what they were going for. You know, it could just be a TV budget, but I would like to think it was deliberate.
So, do you think that he's going to be full antagonist in the show, or do you think that he's just going to be like a, you know, a well-meaning, a dude who wants to be a good Captain America, but just isn't really worthy of the shield the way that Sam would have been?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because they could go a number of ways with it. They could go like, you know, he's a straight up nutcase who shouldn't have been given the chance to be Captain America, which is one valid interpretation of US Agent. Mm. There could be, you know, he's a good guy, but he just, as you say, he doesn't measure up. That's another valid interpretation of US Agent. My feeling about this specific character is that they'll probably go the route of, you know, he wants to be Captain America. They've told him he can be Captain America, but he's just not going to be good enough, and he's going to have a hard time accepting that. And whether they take that to him being a full antagonist, or whether he's ultimately going to be like, fair enough, I'm stepping down because this guy is obviously feels more strongly than I do. Mm. We'll see.
I do like the idea. Again, I would have liked to have seen more of the show's chess pieces laid out in this first episode, but
mm-hmm.
from, I guess, projecting some of the stuff that we know onto the show as well, that we've got the Flag Smashers, we've got John Walker, Captain America.
We've wearing got, a flag.
We've got Baron Zemo coming, and, you know, Zemo again was one of those that, yeah, he was a proper wrong-end in Civil War, but again, you got it, didn't you? You were like, yeah, he ideologically thinks that these superheroes are a bad thing. And mm-hmm. and that he didn't... Like, I don't like Captain America Civil War in the grand scheme of the MCU, but I think the Zemo stuff in there is some of the most successful stuff.
Yeah.
I liked his viewpoint, and I think it would be interesting revisiting that character after Endgame. Right, where you've now got people thanking Avengers in the streets. You know, on a Tunisian street, there's people going, "Oh, Falcon, thank you." that's a different world from the fallout of the Sokovia Accords.
Sure, but he's also got 5 years of absolute tumult that are, you know, directly caused by superheroes.
I don't agree with that. The superheroes stopped it. They reversed it.
Thanos wasn't coming until the Avengers got active, right?
Thanos was coming anyway. He was always looking for the Infinity Stones. I'm not going to blame them for that one. I think
Baron Zemo might not be as forgiving.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll see. I think we've got some interesting forces lined up in this show. But only 5 more weeks to explore it, and I think we're probably going to get some, you know, I think prepare from the way WandaVision went for episode 6 being a big old action movie for a decent stretch of its running time. I'm still on the fence about this, James. I like some of the stuff in there. It's not the blow your doors off first couple of episodes that WandaVision was.
No, I'm sort of glad this wasn't the first show out the gate, to be honest. Having seen both of them, I'm like, if this had been the first Marvel TV show, I'd have been very concerned.
I'd still, you know, I would have been, as a Marvel fan, I would be watching the rest of this series regardless. I don't think it's a bad episode of television. I don't think, you know, I just think it kind of slows down in that second half. And I wonder whether this show would have also benefited from putting the first 2 episodes out the way that WandaVision did. But, you know, I was reading afterwards, apparently WandaVision wanted to debut its first 3 episodes.
They just weren't finished. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and they just literally couldn't do it. They needed the extra week. So I do wonder whether that's, you know, we thought we were going to get Loki like a week after Falcon and the Winter Soldier, didn't we? And I do wonder whether all of the COVID stuff has affected Loki as well, and that show's not going to be ready until a little bit later. But yeah, it will be nice next week to kind of be able to talk about how we think the show is going to play out once we've seen those characters together. And yeah, I want to see them hanging out with John Walker as well. I'm assuming that, you know, Falcon's taking jobs for the US military. I'm assuming he's going to be working with John Walker.
You would imagine, right? I'm excited probably most of all to see what they do with John Walker.
Especially if he walks in and he's like, so you're my sidekick, right?
Yeah. Are we taking point on this? Dynamic. I mean, in fairness, we don't know if he's got superpowers even.
Yeah, no. He could just be some
grunt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although so it'll be interesting.
There is a guy with superpowers out in Tunisia, James.
I mean, that did not escape my notice.
Something to keep an eye on. Cool. Anyway, it was nice as well, I think, to be able to sit back and just appraise this episode and not be like, so do we think that this means the Serpent Society? this is less mystery box from the off. We're not waiting for an aerospace engineer to turn up anytime soon. We're just waiting for the two friends to meet and hang out.
The two leads to meet, yeah.
Yes. Okay, listeners, well, I hope you enjoyed this and the first episode of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and we will be back with episode 2 next week.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.